Waiter, waiter. More.
Chicken lay. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How you doing? Were you as surprised by the rain this weekend as I was? I didn't think it was supposed to rain this weekend. It was clear, and I woke up in the middle of the night, Friday night, and it was pounding. And I thought, oh, I don't like to say rain, rain, go away, or anything similar, because I don't like droughts. Droughts are not good for us. However, enough already. And I have guests this evening, been here before, but I have a feeling they are the epitome of enough already when it comes to rain, and that is Dusky Estes and John Stewart of the beloved Zazu restaurant in the Barlow. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
I hope you didn't have PTSD when it started raining this weekend.
I definitely have PTSD.
Yeah.
Like a little.
A little, yeah.
We moved here from Seattle, and we both love rain, mm-hmm. but we don't want drought as well, but We're definitely exhausted by it at this point.
Yeah. So how are things right now at Zazu? Where are you in the process?
We are cleaning. So mm-hmm. we've broken the entire restaurant down and moved essentially the entire restaurant off-site.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a lot of drywall in the restaurant?
Yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
okay.
It's everything, yeah. Essentially everything that was, you know, there was 22 inches of water. So because of that,
22 height,
22 inches of water in our restaurant.
In our space. Uh-huh. And we were at the lower end, you know, Village Bakery had 50 inches and all those businesses on the other side there. Mm-hmm. So there was 22 inches of water. Then there's a certain amount of like wicking that happens.
Right.
Where the moisture pulls up into the drywall.
Right.
So they take off the lower 4 feet. Mm-hmm. So you can look through the building now. It's all ripped out at 4 feet and they're disassembling the walk-ins tomorrow. And getting that all dry, then they put in these gigantic sort of dehumidifiers mm-hmm. and suck all the moisture out.
Right.
And then do kind of like structural type inspections. Mm-hmm. It's all new-ish construction. The interior walls, I should say. The exterior walls, the buildings have been there for I'm not sure how long, mm-hmm. but they're like 5 feet of concrete. So that is fine. The exterior walls are totally fine. And then, you know, we kind of see what happens from there.
Okay. Did you have, I assume everyone was the same with this, but the drains, instead of draining, worked in reverse and added to the water, the flooding?
Not everybody was the same.
Oh, okay.
That definitely happened in Community Market.
Right, yeah.
In our case, I don't know if they worked or not. I mean, I know they did.
Yeah, like
I know that water was coming out because when we were trying to install the flood locks on the eastern side of the building, that's where water was shooting out of the building because of those pumps. Uh-huh. So there was water coming out, uh-huh. But it could not keep up with the speed at which it was going in.
Going in, yeah. And that all happened, if my understanding of it is correct. The worst part of the flooding was with high tide, right? When the river crested. And it backed up through the lagoon.
Yeah, and that sort of always happens. You know,
right,
our kids went to, you know, Summerfield over there on Willowside Road, and that would happen when there were kind of crazy rains like this. Mm-hmm. High tide, you know, the water wants to flow out, but then at high tide, the water's pushing back, mm-hmm. and at a certain point just spreads out.
Right.
And, you know, they would have those sort of flood days.
Yeah. So basically, Friday was the day we finally were able to get all of our stuff out of the restaurant. Mm-hmm. It took that many days of moving.
About 10 days.
We had a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah.
So,
like way more stuff than you can even, like you just don't think about it.
Yeah, you posted some pictures.
And it's
a lot
sort
of
like when you're moving in your own home, you know, you move like a couch and a table and a bed, and you think you're making progress, yeah. but then, you know, there's 37 million boxes in the kitchen and the closets take forever. And
then you start packing books.
Yeah, and you just start to realize like how much stuff you have. Yeah. And you know,
where are you putting it all?
So our produce company, which is Coastline, I mean, we work with obviously a lot of independent farmers as much as possible, but they provide a big chunk of, you know, they bring us dairy and all kinds of other things. And they're on Todd Road on Standish there. They've given us a big chunk of their space.
Oh, nice.
They're awesome. They gave us trucks and space. And the junior college let us wash everything.
Yeah, you mentioned that. That's great. Now, then, at that big facility, the
new
facility.
Culinary Center. So, and then Pax, who's the winery that had formerly been Wind Gap in the Barlow.
Okay.
He gave us these pick bins, the grape tubs. So we filled that with our stuff, and then with forklifts, we loaded them onto my truck. We drove them over. We cleaned everything. We sanitized the bins, and then we moved everything over to the produce company. In the middle of all that, people power washed and sanitized all the shelving. And then that went over there. So it's all sort of organized. It'll go back in a much more organized fashion.
But it definitely took a village. I mean, we also, Guayaki is holding all of our big equipment. So it had to be all sanitized before it went into their space. But now it's hanging out in their space waiting. And then all of our wine went over to Woodfour because they could bring a forklift and these big bins for their bottles.
And Woodfour didn't flood.
Woodford did not flood.
I heard that Crooked Goat flooded.
Crooked Goat
and
absolutely flooded.
And that surprised me because it's pretty high.
No, it's the
along
closest
Morris.
To Morris.
Right.
You know, and so it sort of floods from that back corner over by Costa Brown. It kind of comes in that way and forward. But those buildings down there are all sort of the lowest.
But that place, I think, is built by five contractors, is who the owners are of Crooked Goat. So they're the most prepared to fix back up and get running. They have a posse, you know, behind them to make it so. So they might be among the first
to reopen
because they don't need to find labor. They are the labor.
Yeah.
I don't know how to build a building.
I don't either. Interesting. Did you lose a lot of, you must have lost a lot of food.
Yeah, we had to throw everything out. We're still trying to figure out what we've lost because we haven't, we still don't have power. We don't know.
Right.
And now our equipment's all not attached to power anyway. We don't know if any of our equipment works.
Like the gas stuff I fired up and it did work, but all the refrigeration, we're not 100% sure. We've been, you know, I was on the phone with different refrigeration people, the guy that does all the maintenance. He seems to think everything should be fine. So we're proceeding in that direction. But
and we heard the Kosho sushi place that had more water than us, their refrigeration was fine.
Oh, okay,
so
good.
We're hoping that we follow suit because we had less water than they did. But anyway, we don't know all the loss yet.
Right. Okay.
And it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one's reopened yet, right?
No. We heard, I think, Community Market maybe the first, I mean, the businesses that are open in the Barlow are Taylor Lane, Fern Bar, Woodfour.
Woodfour is?
Yeah.
Woodfour's open.
Okay.
Spirit Works.
California Sister, Spirit Works.
Oh, California Sisters.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, good.
So you can go get your local flowers. You can go get your local booze. You can go get your local caffeine. And they definitely all want to see you, for sure.
Oh, definitely.
It's those of us a little bit closer to Morris Street, and you know, Village Bakery is closed still.
Yeah, I heard they're it's going to be
Two Dog Night, Nectary, Barrio, Farmer's Wife.
That's
the creamery. It was Sub Zero.
That's right.
Yeah, they changed their name. But
okay, I missed the name change.
And KB also apparently had a lot of damage.
And that little clothing store.
Tamarind
had a lot of damage.
Yeah, I thought about Mad Mod Shop.
Yeah, I love Mad Mod.
The place
miss them.
I do too, but my checking account doesn't miss them.
Well, you can go over to Calistoga and still join her with her awesomeness.
Yeah, it was awesome. And I thought, well, She's probably really super glad she moved to Calistoga.
And
now,
I did see that Tamron has, you know, they've set up a GoFundMe to pay for their staff and to hopefully get dry cleaning for a lot of the stuff. And they'll eventually have some sort of sale, you know, to move the clothing that was in there.
Mm-hmm. And then the farmer's wife took a pretty bad hit.
Yeah.
All those three, those, you know, Nectary, Barrio, and Farmer's Wife were all kind of in Barrio. A row.
And the ice cream shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They all took, we're up above 5 feet, I think.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty staggering.
Yeah.
It's
I've never been in it, and it's amazing because I feel like the time of the incident was about 36 hours because started, you know, at 6 a.m. on Wednesday, and then we went every 2 hours through Wednesday night to Thursday pumping, adding propane to a pump to try to exit. Or sorry.
Yeah, just gas.
I don't know the words. Adding gas to a pump to get the water out. And so it seems like it was a short amount of time, but
it's been 13 days.
It's been 13 days that we've been working from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. doing nothing but power washing and moving heavy things. And But I'm grateful to this community. So many people showing up to help.
You heard the first day, people from K&L came and helped, which is, you know, and then Pacific. I don't know if you've needed a Pacific, but I've been so pleased that Pacific Market has given cooler space to people. I know that Adam Parks of Vic Farm Meats, he was able to store his meats there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, it's great when competitors like that start
just give work whatever
together.
They can.
Like, what a
great and
community.
Mambo's has given us pizzas that first day. Trish,
that first night though, when we were pumping, like after we were there the first day from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m., some couple walked down the street and handed us burritos, and we hadn't eaten all day, and I was soaking wet because I had fallen in the water early in the morning and never stopped, you know.
Yeah.
And so the way people are showing up is amazing. Summerfield sent us, I don't know, 10 to 15 kids on Friday to do the getting out of the rest. Sonoma Academy has been sending our staff lunch every day for 2 weeks.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it's amazing how people show up. And it's funny, too. People have been bringing us dinner every night because they know we mostly live out of the restaurant. And we don't have that anymore.
Yeah. I almost brought you soup today. But I thought, oh, I better ask them first. This is going to go on for a while. They might be overloaded, so I'll bring them soup another time.
That part is great.
Let's take a little quick musical break here, and we're going to talk more about what's going to unfold over the next few weeks.
Good morning, Captain. Good morning to you.
My guests this evening, Dusky Estes and John Stewart of Zazu Restaurant. In case you missed last week's show, should know that all of Mouthful's episodes are available online on iTunes and on our website. We had Adam Parks from Victorian Farmstead Meats covering the same topic. What happened to his kiosk inside of Community Market and what he's doing in the meantime. And he talked a lot about the two of you. He talked about how one of your main concerns is the same concern he has, which is your employees. And so he had some interesting ideas about what he's doing. He's he attends farmers markets anyway, but he's trying to attend more. He's trying to get into Sebastopol for a month, and he's going up to Cloverdale, and he's starting a delivery service that he's wanted to do for a while, but that's one way that he's going to try to keep his staff working. So I'm curious, talk to me about your staff. What's happening?
So we laid off 35 people.
We have a really big staff.
We have a big staff, and that's really hard. And they all know how painful that was.
Sure. But that also allows them then to apply for unemployment.
Yep. And then we started a GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. And so any of them that have needed help, we're there for them and have been giving them what we can.
Uh-huh.
And
And they set up another one for themselves.
They did, because they
didn't... To hopefully try to free up some of that stuff that we set up for the recouping, whatever we need to do with for the restaurant.
Sure.
They are obviously our primary focus. Many of them have been with us forever, you know, 12 plus years. Mm-hmm. And they're all critical, no matter, you know, whatever their position sort of. So, you know.
But we're still, so luckily we still have products. So our candy making team is still making our, we make a bacon caramel popcorn and a chicharrón peanut butter cup and a bacon toffee lollipop and bacon.
Did you bring me a bacon toffee lollipop?
I didn't and I should have.
You know who loves those?
Who does?
Francis Coppola.
I do know that.
Do you remember that, remember whatever that competition was?
Yeah, in Cochon.
He sat across from me.
Oh, my God. I have a picture of him eating that lollipop.
I need that picture. I need to see that picture. Because I asked him, we were talking as we were walking out, and I asked him what he liked the best, and he named your stuff.
But so we, anyway, so our candy making team is still making candy.
Where do you distribute those?
On our, mostly currently on our website. Okay. So we have a website, blackpigmeatco.com, but we're also, you can get our bacon at Oliver's, Andy's, Big John's, Pacific. So all those grocery stores are good spots to get. So, but you can also get it on our website and we ship all over the country.
Oh, you do? Okay.
So we went to the, one of our staff we sent to LA this weekend because John won a good food award for his prosciutto this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So we sent Lacey, who's our bartender, and she loves talking to people normally behind a bar. Mm-hmm, sure. But instead we sent her down to LA to pitch bacon to all the, you know, buyers in Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
So, and Kirsten, who's our, she's one of our candy makers, who's our other front of house manager. So she's been making a lot of the popcorn, and we're going to send her to San Francisco to try to sell popcorn and bacon.
Yeah, people are, all kinds of people, you know, are offering us kitchens.
Oh, great.
So...
Yeah,
yeah, we're, I was asking, where did you have to move where you make your...
we're still so we're still catering, and luckily we have a food truck.
Right.
So like we'll be at the LBC Women in Conversation event next Wednesday.
What is that?
So there's a Women in Conversation put on by the Press Democrat next Wednesday, and our food truck will be there before from 4:30 to 6:30. So you'll be able to get lots of yummy goodies, and we decided we'd even bring t-shirts and, you know, merchandise that people could help us by by buying some of that. But so we have a website, we're in grocery stores, go get our bacon, send our bacon to all your friends. And then we have our GoFundMe, and we're also just beginning to organize on the last day of March, which are there 31 days in
31
March?
31 days in March.
On March 31, we're going to do a party at Davis Family Vineyards from noon to 3. And we'll put that on our Facebook, and we will email it out in our newsletter.
What sort of party?
It'll be a fundraiser with music and Davis Family Wines and our food truck. So you can come and sort of help us rebuild and get some good food from us and give us some dough.
Yeah,
excellent.
Exactly.
Excellent. I knew you guys would have some really interesting things that you're doing to keep an income stream going.
Yeah, and we're doing a big event for Sonoma Academy this weekend. So luckily, because, you know, Kendall Jackson has offered kitchens and Rocchioli has offered kitchens. Like, there's a lot of people with industrial kitchens who are so willing to help us. We're really lucky.
Yeah,
we haven't been on the receiving end of really anything like this, you know, and we're really grateful for everyone who's reached out.
It's really great to see the community come together in this way. I'm curious, tell me about the bacon. I've had your bacon, of course, many times. I think I cooked 125 pounds of it once.
Yeah,
something
for
like
the biggest
that.
BLT
yeah,
ever.
Exactly.
Yeah. how did that all get started?
So when we had, I mean, I guess even before we had Bovalo, I just kind of like making things. That's why I cook. Different people obviously cook for different reasons. I love making things with my hands. I do a lot of woodworking. I do all kinds of different stuff. And so
you also, and I love this about you, you sew.
I sew.
I just love that.
I own 3 sewing machines.
You own 3? Wow.
Three.
I only own 1.
I don't even know how to work it.
There you go. No, I have a super high-tech, like, new one, but I also was over at the Parkside sewing place.
That's where
and
I
And he's,
that's
like,
where I
the most honest human being on the planet.
Yes.
I was trying to sew up heavy fabrics, and he was like, well, there's these, like, $1,200 commercial ones. He's like, but people give me these old Singer machines from like the 50s and 60s. He's like, some of them sat in garages and they don't work. He's like, but if one of them will start and I can tune it up, like, I'll sell it to you for $100. And there's belts and gears and places you put oil in them. So he sold me this machine so I can sew like duck, like make aprons and really heavy duty things. But yeah, so the bacon, I just like, I never really trained under a lot of people. Most of the stuff I know how to make, I really just started making myself. And I got a pork belly and I got some recipes and I made a pork belly. And then we were going to Bruce Adell's house for breakfast and I brought this slab of bacon I had made, which in hindsight was way more bold than I realized. But,
oh, I know. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I brought in like a slab of bacon and a few dozen eggs and he had a full cheese course. Jesse loved that at a breakfast.
I love
And I started making bacon and I just really made it for the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then there was a guy named
Dan Phillips.
Dan Phillips, who had a website called The Grateful Palate, which was really obscure. Right. Like it was this very random collection of things, like his favorite jelly and maybe there was a sake.
I wrote about him in my DLC book.
And so he had this Bacon of the Month Club. And at the time, we were doing some work for Food & Wine magazine, their thing in Aspen. Dusky and I volunteered there to, you know, I worked with all kinds of great chefs. And we snuck the bacon into this tasting, and he loved it. And he
He was doing a demo on bacon, and so I don't know. Sometimes I don't know where I get my moxie from, but I just ran up on stage with John's bacon, and I was like, "You think all that bacon's good? Try my husband's."
Oh, good for you!
Yeah. And so he had this Bacon of the Month Club, and so right then he was like, you know, if you can get this like through a USDA process, I'll buy like 3,500 pounds, and so that's like a super powerful motivator,
lot.
You know?
Yeah,
that's a lot of bacon.
And so we searched around and we searched around. There's not a lot of places that make bacon sort of the way I do, which is very traditionally we dry rub it
with brown sugar,
and it's a very traditional process that we follow. So we're extracting moisture from it, so we wind up with less bacon than we started. You know, whereas with commercial processes, they'll inject it with things,
so you can
wind up with like 110% of your product, whereas we lose like 20%. But we found this small processing place up in Oregon called Carlton Farms, and they are also a slaughter facility. So we found pigs that we really like that are in Eastern Washington,
and so
pure country pork. And so the pigs come there, they're slaughtered there, and the bacon is made there. And it's just it all happens there. And so the animals are, you know, we've been up there multiple times and seen the whole process. The animals are brought in the night before and they're kind of settled out and in these pens, and then they're brought in the morning. But, you know, it's not exactly how I do things, but it's as close to how I do things. There are people actually rubbing salt and brown sugar on these bellies. It's not industrial,
right?
You know, and it's a plant that's been there sort of forever. So, you know, we've just always liked it.
And the biggest piece for me as a former vegetarian for 23 years that now is co-owner of a meat company and raises pigs in her backyard is that we believe in a great life and only one bad day. So all the pigs that we work with live on pasture, and most pork that anyone has access to through our grocery store system is all confined and never touches the earth. And so you have to work really, really hard to work directly with farms on pigs that were raised the way they should be. And that's really our guiding principle is, you know, these animals give a great gift by giving us their life, and they deserve the respect to have been treated right.
Yeah, they deserve having a good life.
Yeah. So that's basically our big thing, and that has been our thing about all of our protein at Zazu, is that, you know, we buy direct from a local farmer and we, you know, butcher it so we can take it whole off their hands so they aren't figuring
out. You do the butchering?
John does.
I do.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, our staff can do it at this point, but, you know.
And we train our cooks. And
your daughter's, Mackenzie's into it.
Mackenzie, she helps out.
She's now 16. I can't believe it. But she started butchering, I think, when she was 10.
Yeah, or 12, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's good at it. She's better than I am.
Well, she's a little firecracker.
She is. She can be a handful at times, but she's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then what about the candy? How did the candy come about?
Well, the candy actually is funny because when we started competing in these Cochon 555 contests, which are all about whole animal utilization, which we became good at because we wanted pigs on pasture, right? Mm-hmm. So we had to figure out, how do we make people eat the weird parts? And people love sugar.
And so, pork loves sugar. Like, it's just, you know, it sort of lends itself to those sweet flavors.
And how do we use bacon scrap? So, like, the way we use bacon scrap in the restaurant is in our hamburger, right? It's ground into our hamburger. Mm-hmm. But then we made bacon caramel popcorn. You know, then we made bacon toffee lollipops. Then the chicharron we made into peanut butter cups, along with serving chicharrones with our burgers at the restaurant instead of french fries. Mm-hmm. But basically, and then we had all this lard, and our neighbor at the Barlow, she's no longer our neighbor, but now we drive to Petaluma because we still love and adore her. The soap cauldron was our neighbor in the Barlow.
Oh, right.
And so I walked over there with a whack of rose geranium from our garden and a 5-gallon bucket of lard, and I was like, I know you mostly make vegetarian soap, but originally, this is what we all did. Can you make this for me? And so then she started making rose geranium soap and
out of
our lard, and almond lip balm out of our lard.
Now, so
those are
two.
Yeah,
she?
We sell both those products.
That's awesome. That's something I want to learn to do. I want to learn to make soap.
Yeah, and John has actually made candles.
Mm-hmm. But I've made. Well, I mean, it'll work with. I mostly make that with beef fat. And I've never quite figured out soap. Soap seems like, I have seen people that do this cold process soap. Mm-hmm. I've always seen like soap where you're mixing lye and it seems like this not quite magical thing, but like mm-hmm. potentially dangerous thing. I don't know. It's one of those things like pressure canning. Where
so is it
like,
going to blow up?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I totally understand all the principles, but like, and I pressure can, but it's like, you know, one of those things like you're hesitant at first.
Sure.
Because, you know, I understand all the processes involved, but mm-hmm. still, it's like if it goes wrong. There's a pressure cooker that explodes, you know?
But so. Emma's amazing at the soap cauldron. We love her. Yeah.
So she just moved. She moved her business to Petaluma?
Her business to Petaluma with Feed Sonoma, which was also in the Barlow.
Right.
Where Fern Bar is. Right. But now they're... And they distribute our bacon to restaurants in San Francisco and grocery stores in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So we love... You know, all our neighbors in the Barlow, we were all a posse of makers, you know? Mm-hmm. So... We miss our neighbors.
They'll be back. They'll be back soon. They'll be back soon. I'm sure you know who that is. Doing a Memphis mini song and a great version. And, you know, we have a local band here in Sonoma County made up of just two guys, Matt and Robert. Huge Large. Do you know them?
No.
I don't know them.
They're actually fabulous. And Matt plays a cocktail drum set, and Robert plays a guitar non-traditionally. I don't know enough to tell you more than that. And they do mostly covers. I saw them at a funeral concert and they did 96 Tears. And so I was just rocking out on the dance floor. But I think they released, maybe last year, I think they released an album, and they had their version of When the Levee Breaks on it. And if you listen to KRCB or The Crush, you'll hear Huge Large. And it'll sound really familiar. And then it's like, oh,
and, you know, that's it.
And Matt was winemaker at Preston for a long time. He left.
I remember. I knew him at Preston.
Okay, Matt, and he was doing Preston olive oil.
Yeah,
he's doing everything, and he left. I think a year ago or so.
And love Robert Preston. We just saw Lou and Susan
the other day.
Yeah,
God,
we were up
in
Healdsburg, you know, figuring out what kitchen we could work at. And of course, I said, I think I need a margarita at Mateo's. And we walked across the street and Lou and Susan walked in. And somebody once asked me in an interview, who is your role model? Who do you look up to guide you? And I don't know that Lou knows this, but I said Lou Preston.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Because he's the most authentic, real deal farmer.
Absolutely.
You know, he pulled up grapes for diversity of agriculture. Who does that?
No one.
You know, he raises animals. He makes olive oil. He makes wood-fired oven bread. I mean, he is a Renaissance man.
He makes amazing sauerkraut. Oh, my God. His sauerkraut is astonishing.
And I just love what he stands for. Yeah. In everything he does.
Lou's absolutely wonderful. And Susan is wonderful. She's a great artist. You know, she does a lot of the wine labels.
And doing the right thing is always their guide.
Yes.
You know, and that it's so rare to see and find.
It is. It's getting increasingly rare.
So, yeah, I really look up to them. They're really amazing people.
Cool. You told me a long time ago, you told me a story that I need you to tell.
Oh, no. I don't remember.
You'll remember. There's no question. And it's about a dream you had about an elephant tattoo.
Of course I will remember.
You would be astonished how often I think about this. I think about this a lot. It's one of my favorite stories I've ever heard from anyone. So would you?
I will, although it does embarrass John, but I guess it's good to embarrass your husband every now and again.
The way you told me, there was nothing embarrassing about it.
But I'm somebody who's really grounded in reality, I have to say. And this story somewhat makes it sound like I'm kind of weird and flaky. I'm not weird and flaky is all I can tell you. But when I met John, we were working for a chef named Tom Douglas in Seattle, who had at the time 3 restaurants. Now he has above 20. So, but at the time there were, you know, somewhere around 250 employees. I don't even know how many he has now. But I didn't know who John was because my job was to go into one of Tom's restaurants and take over for any chef or sous chef. And they all had changing menus and boss everybody around and make decisions and do the ordering. And so I did a lot of faking it, but I didn't know anyone's name. Mm-hmm. And John was the crab cake guy to me. He was the guy 3 people down the line who was the only line cook in the crab cake station. And it's kind of funny because we don't really eat fish because we don't raise fish. But so... he's the only guy who would deliver me a crab cake that I didn't have to refuse and send back because people would forget to press it down in the pan. And so you'd have an eye of uncooked breadcrumb that looked not enjoyable. So I would be like, no, cook it again. No, cook it again. No, cook it again. But if John was standing there, it was this beautifully golden brown, crunchy, like he took the time to press them all down and he paid attention. And so he was crab cake guy to me. And then I had this dream that involved somebody with a ring of tattoos, a tattoo that was a ring of elephants around his arm. And in the dream, that tattooed elephant was carrying me.
Oh, that part I didn't know.
So then the next day we were at work, you know, 3 people between us, and I'm barking orders about what food needs to be cooked. And he reached up to get a can of olive oil, and the sleeve went up, and there was the tattoo.
That just gives me chills.
And I was completely like, it gave me chills. Like, I went from, like, bossing him around to being like, who is that guy? I definitely... And the crush began.
It's just such a wonderful story. But now I get to ask John, tell us about why you got that tattoo.
I had a grandmother who just collected elephants, like all sorts of, from very large things down to little teeny tiny little like 1-inch things. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know her very well. I was young when she passed away.
Did you know or did you learn later why she collected elephants?
No, I never really learned. And they were always kind of private people. But both of they were my grandparents on my dad's side. They both passed away when I was young. But then, I don't know, elephants lend themselves to going that sort of nose to tail kind of circus thing. And it's a tattoo, but it's somewhat more cartoony than like tough guy. You know, like I've never liked that sort of, you know, I like the images and they're kind of funny and, you know, but it's not about, so I just sort of got it. And Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers actually has it.
Oh, really?
It's sort of a copy of that.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
where I was like, oh, his is a little bit more mastodon-y, I guess you might say. They have more of that flat sort of thing. But, you know, so I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'll get that.
That makes me think of Lucas.
Why?
And Lucas, same age as your Righty. Oldest, yes. Yeah. And do you remember, I don't know, because you had your restaurant on Guerneville Road, Hot Monk, for a very brief time, was the Mastodon Museum?
Yes.
Well, Lucas was about 2 and a half, and he talked, not so much baby talk. He was mentally articulate, but it wasn't coming out of his mouth. Complete, you know, it was still little toddler talk. And we were out spending the day, and I said, we parked, and I said, okay, Lucas, let's go to the Elephant Museum. And he looked at me, said, Mimi, it's not an elephant museum, in his little voice. It's a mastodon museum. You know, that's one of my favorite moments, and it's one of my two favorite tattoos in the world. Do you know a lot about elephants?
I don't know a ton about them. They're very smart, and I know other people that are really super into them.
The more you learn about elephants, the more they take your breath away. And I'm going to tell you one story because I know that you'll both love it, and there's enough time to tell the story. And, you know, people often take their spirit animal. Especially with a lot of women, they tend to be very sexy looking animals. And, you know, that are sleek and, oh, yeah, in my dreams, I'm a leopard and, you know, or a cheetah. And I've thought about what's my spirit animal. And the more I think about it, I think it's an elephant. And it's an elephant partly because they have really deep and long memories and detailed memories. And I have that kind of memory. I remember things from before I was 2 years old, you know, and at 3 in the morning, it's not a good, it serves me really well as a writer. I didn't have to take notes when I was a restaurant critic. 3 in the morning, it's not a great thing, you know, it's really not. But there was a story very recently, year or so ago, it took place in Africa, and there was a man, an Englishman, who had worked in one of the, you know, rural areas of Africa, protecting elephants, and did a lot to establish, you know, stopping poachers and all that kinds of things. And he lived there, if I remember right, he lived there for like 20 or 30 years. And he went back to England, and he passed away. And about 24 hours after he passed away, all of these elephants showed up at what had been his home.
Wow.
And they stood there for a full day. They held vigil. And somehow, and I don't remember this part, they were able to, they must have known they were coming. They were able to witness some of their travels. They didn't graze as they came. And elephants, when they're just out and about, they graze. That's what they do. They didn't graze. They came to his home and they stood vigil for 24 hours. And then they left.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And this other, about 10 years ago, I saw a story on PBS, and it was about elephants. And there was a young boy, or teenage elephant, and getting close to full size, but not sent out on his own yet, as the males eventually are. His mother was killed. And every year on his mother's birthday, he would go to the boneyard, and he would find her jawbone. And he would caress it. He would stand there for hours caressing his mother's jawbone. Aww. They have those kinds, that level of intelligence and that kind of memory. So your tattoo is a tribute to one of the four most intelligent creatures on Earth. There's dolphins, crows and ravens, elephants and humans are considered the four most intelligent species. So I think it's awesome.
I like that.
There you
story.
Go. And when we get through this one, I'm going to get an umbrella somewhere. I think that's appropriate for the flood.
That, you know.
This whole arm is sort of about food stuff or things related to my food career. So I'm going to get an umbrella up here.
So Patrick, you know,
maybe
Patrick Amio, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, we adore Patrick.
Patrick's wonderful.
He painted our food truck. His daughter worked for us and used to make donuts for us for a number of years. But so he always said it was a portrait of me. He did the sculpture that when you walked into Zazu was me with my pig. with my pigtails and my overalls. But we, when we were pumping out the restaurant, the hose that was shooting the water out of the restaurant rested on Patrick's statue.
We kind of tied it in between the ears and off the
otherwise
pigtail.
It would move, right? Uh-huh. So we had to affix it to something.
It's like a fire hose without an end, so it would just flop around.
But so we've told Patrick he's got to add some water component to the to the statue. Uh-huh. So whether it be, I don't know,
a hose. Out of the flood and he was standing there. I was like, so I think you have to add one bit to this statue. It can't be a fountain because we don't have that kind of space, but it needs to be.
That's a great idea.
I was like, there should be an additional piece.
This one time somebody, I think he had done a statue or a construction of an emu. I forget where it was, but I'd seen this emu. And about a week later, I got a box of wine in the mail, unsolicited, just this box of wine. And it was emu wine. And it came, it had a yellow cardboard box with a picture of an emu on it. And then the wine labels, I think it was three bottles. And I was like, I cannot open this. And I just drove over to Patrick's house and left it on his porch. It's like, Patrick has to have this.
So
yeah,
funny.
In the middle of the floods, I called him because we have this enormous piece of his on the wall inside the restaurant. There's four pigs and dozens of flowers underneath it. And we didn't want it damaged, but we didn't want to. I was like, can you come down here and take this thing off the wall? Like, I don't know what all this moisture does. It's paper mache.
Paper mache.
Yeah,
definitely.
So we called
him.
He came down in the middle of it. Like, we were all slogging around, but I was like, you have to.
Yeah, we were walking around in mud boots, you know, and he came down and took down our art piece for us.
Cool.
I was like, can you come and take down, like, the art, your art?
I was like, will you save it?
Yeah, we don't.
Of course he will.
So I don't know where it is. I don't know what happened to it, but he'll bring it back. Uh-huh. Better and stronger.
Well,
you know?
He's got that studio now, doesn't he, on 116?
He has it, the one in downtown Santa Rosa.
That's his daughter.
Okay, I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah, there was a place.
He moves a lot.
There's a place on 116.
Yeah, further south of Sebastopol. I don't know that he still does as much stuff there.
But just you still, whenever I pass it, because I always smile because I see Patrick's stuff.
His stuff always makes
me
smile.
He made this whole carousel for a museum up in Montreal.
I wanted
him
to do a dachshund for me.
And I think it like exhausted him and he was like, I'm done. But I'm sure, like everyone else, he'll get back into
it. He'll get back into it.
You know, with just some other type of. But we saw it once. It was a full carousel, and he did all the characters.
How big? What size?
Full size.
Full size.
He bought a carousel from like Mexico somewhere, and then brought it up here.
Yeah, it's in Montreal.
It's in Montreal. This like near a skating rink or something.
Wow.
Because he's Canadian and.
I have to look for some, see if I can find some pictures.
Yeah.
Of
that. Oh,
it's amazing.
It was nuts. I mean, yeah, it's like, you know, however many carousel people there are. Is it 48 or 70 or, you know, and he redid sort of everything.
And it
he
had
felt
lots
like he
of...
was cheating if he, like, took any of the parts and modified it. So there's, like, you know, hockey players with, you know, all kinds, you know, it's just nuts.
Yeah, like, there was a big ice skate. I remember there was, like, wasn't there a big, like, base?
Might have been a base, but he could have been making that for somebody else. It wasn't.
I don't know. He was just making, like, it was all random, cool things.
Yeah. He's like, you know, I wonder if I could ever get him onto Mouthful.
I think you could.
I would love to have. I've always thought he was shy.
He is shy.
Yeah. And
he says he won't let anybody hug him, but he lets me hug him.
Wow.
He finds it to be an annoying American habit.
Yeah. I understand. And I really. I don't press people who are shy. I have a huge shy bone, and I understand.
No, that's like Tom Waits has come into the restaurant since we've opened, and I just feel like he wants to be left alone.
He does.
So I leave him alone.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I just really, I've had a copy of Closing Time on vinyl, like, in the office. I won't even ask him to sign it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I should ask him.
And that's why he keeps coming.
Yeah, but I'm like, he just, no, because when we were at Summerfield, he had a son there, and he described it to another parent, not to me. But on some field trip, he was like, fame is a coat I wish I could take off sometimes.
Yeah, I see
you know?
Him.
So it's like, just
I see him around town, and I've met him a number of times through people we know. And I was like, God, does he think that I'm just an unfriendly jerk? Because if I see him, I won't even say hi because I don't want to intrude on his space. I know how he feels.
Yeah.
And I see him often. I see him, and I see Peter Krause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Anyway, we don't have a whole lot of time, so we have to quit gossiping. As fun as it is, not gossiping, but you know, I want to go through what people can do. First of all, very quick question. Do you have an estimated time of opening yet?
I mean, everything is kind of, you know, they turn on all these blowers tomorrow. So we should have a better idea about what that timeline looks like by the end of the week.
Okay. And I'll be talking, once things start opening, I'm going to do another show about the Barlow. And I do want to give a shout out to the Sebastopol City Council, because I know they voted recently, I think Tuesday, they voted to waive fees.
Yes.
They voted to waive inspection fees and that sort of thing. So bravo, Sebastopol City Council. So in the meantime, the ways that people can support you: buy Black Pig bacon. Go to, is it blackpigmeatco.com?
Yes.
You can order bacon.
You can order bacon
lollipops.
Bacon lollipops.
Send me a bacon lollipop if you love me. You can order bacon. You can send bacon to somebody you love who lives in Mississippi. You can send things to people because you ship. And then Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, you're going to be outside LBC.
It's not. It's Wednesday the 20th.
Okay.
2 weeks.
So,
oh,
yeah.
2 weeks.
Wednesday the 20th, we'll be outside the LBC from 4:30 to 6:30. On March 31, we'll be at Davis Family Vineyards from noon to 3 with amazing wine and good music and killer food.
And is that admission fee, or you just, you go and you spend money?
I think you go and spend money, but we haven't really figured it out yet. We're pulling it together.
Yeah.
But come join us at Davis to, you know, get rowdy to music and share some hugs and hopefully some laughs.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, the laughs during the whole thing, like John, I don't know if anyone saw his Facebook post, but he put up the wet floor sign in the middle of the flood.
Yes.
It was floating by me, but
yes,
you know.
It was floating. I saw
I was
that.
Like, I'm gonna, I am our safety officer. I am. That's actually one of my titles.
Yeah. And I do. I love you. I love your Facebook posts. You're really fun on Facebook.
And our staff has a, you know, a GoFundMe, which isn't, you know, redundant. It's just, you know, they're trying to actually do some stuff for themselves to free up what we've raised.
There's a lot of
you
help
that's needed. And GoFundMe for all the businesses
all
down
the businesses.
There. Everybody has set them up.
Yeah.
It's a great way to just, you know, you don't need to be splashing around in the water with us to help. There's people that, you know, like dry cleaning for Tamarind or whatever it is that need help. The Sebastopol Senior Center, or that community center, is totally screwed up. Like, they definitely need help as well. I mean, that's not part of the Barlow, but it's definitely part of the community.
And it's part of the Laguna.
Yeah. They need your help. I mean, there's a lot of damage that happened all along that road.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking time out from cleaning. I really enjoy talking to you too. Meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming here on KRCB-FM. Take care of yourself and take care of your loved ones.
Take it to the bridge. I don't care if it costs more money to shop there. Cause this was love. Cause this was love. I don't care if you have to walk longer. I'll walk further. I'll pay more. I don't really want what the new mall got. I want what they got in that corner store.